Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
I just want to welcome you formally to Crossover, Robert Spano. Maestro Spano, you have really created quite a niche for yourself. I heard you conduct the Rachmaninoff Symphonic Dances in Cincinnati some years ago with the Cincinnati Symphony. And it was a long time ago, but you left a tremendous impression on me. And then, of course, I began hearing about you and your successes. And, of course, I had interviewed Jennifer Higdon a few times, and she talked about your doing her work. But you have come out with this incredible album called Transmigration. And I have to tell you, this was a necessary project. It was necessary because people need this.
Oh, that's a wonderful sentiment.
I really think so. I listened to this. I kind of said, ho-hum, the adagio, you know, for strings, and, of course, the wonderful choral. But then I began to listen to the other works on the album. And I must tell you that it really kind of defies words because people need to have this experience. You have to grieve, you know, after any loss. And this, all of these works, the Adams especially, really, I think, is just incredible. And you have done a marvelous thing doing this. What led you to put this album together?
Well, really, it wasn't conceived initially, but rather grew out of our desire to record principally The Transmigration of Souls of John Adams.
Incredible.
And The Dooryard Bloom of Jennifer Higdon.
Yes.
And then, you know, in thinking about, we didn't even know those two would be on the same CD at a certain point. We just knew those were in our recording plans and interests as being important works to record. And then as it unfolded, we realized those two works had a lot to say to each other and belonged together in a way. And then the idea of fleshing it out with the other works came into play. I mean, the Barbara Adagio is certainly an obvious link to grief and loss.
Mm-hmm.
But then the idea of having the choral version and the string version on the same CD appealed to us very much. And then Corigliano's Elegy is dedicated to Samuel Barber.
Yes.
So there was a nice link there as well. And so this constellation of pieces around difficult emotions just seemed like the right mix. And it took a long time to actually put together because we recorded things even in different seasons. And so it was really a gratifying feeling when the CD finally came out. I think Jennifer's Dooryard Bloom had been in the can for 2 years or more before we actually released the CD. So it was a very gratifying feeling when it was finally done.
Well, you know,
an assistant of ours on staff at the ASO, actually, when we were trying to think of a name, we wanted a name for the whole CD. And of course, we settled on Transmigration. An assistant at the orchestra at one point said, well, what about Bummer?
Well,
which I thought was
it really
perfect.
Is. I was going to ask you, what mood were you in and in the process? It's very, very profound. I mean, it's the kind of thing that, as I told you, even if you have not been affected on those occasions by the horrific loss, you just experience this transformation. You know, you just have to stop and you have to think and you have to listen. And I think you need the peace that this offers. It's an incredible experience to listen. And I must say, when I saw the album, I said, all right, Adams, Barber, oh my goodness, Higdon, you know, okay, here we go. And I have to tell you, it's just a fabulous experience.
We were concerned, too, about an entire CD with such weight, everything having such weight. But my experience was so gratifying when I first listened to it as a CD end to end. It was everything I could have hoped for in terms of the content, musical and aesthetic and emotional content. That really was a journey for me as a listener. And I, of course, hadn't, even though we recorded all that music, I hadn't experienced it as a CD, as a listening experience of a CD until it was finished.
And the parentheses of the orchestral adagio for strings, you know, and then the Agnus Dei closing of the Barber.
That really worked for me
that was great.
In a way that I didn't even anticipate it being.
Sometimes it's like, well, it's dumb luck, I think we say. It just kind of happens.
Right,
you say,
right.
Gee, what a great idea. But, you are, I think, are a person that has defied the odds in a particular way. You know the situation across the country with the problems of filling the houses with, you know, classical music. All the even the big orchestras are having a problem. And of course, there's always that, the reason is, quote, too much contemporary music. People aren't ready for that. And yet you have programmed contemporary music and you have created a tremendous reputation with it and also for the symphony. And I think from what I read, you have fabulous attendance and the patrons, are very happy with the progress that has been made financially. So how do you do it?
I think part of it is that what contemporary music means has changed so much in the last couple decades.
Mm-hmm.
I think, at a certain time in the 20th century, the second half of the 20th century, there was certainly a period where contemporary music meant, on the whole, not everybody, of course, but there was a certain hegemony of music that was difficult to listen to, even for musicians, difficult to play, difficult to listen to. And that's not to say it's not good music, because as de Tocqueville warned us in Democracy in America, don't confuse the voice of the majority with an estimation of the quality of things.
Never. That's right.
But although that works in both directions, just because things are popular doesn't mean they're not good either.
Exactly.
But certainly there was a period where that period in music, I think, will never be immensely popular. And much of it I love, but it's simply not going to appeal to a great many people. I don't think that's the case now at all. And there's been a noticeable generational shift, aesthetically speaking.
Yeah.
And composers my age in America tend to be more focused on, I sort of identified it as tunes, tonality.
Yes, exactly.
And an interest in world music or popular music or both, and that influences their music. And those qualities have a wider appeal. I think all these composers are very true to their own voice. As Michael Gandolfi would say, I write music that I want to hear. And I think that's a powerful thing to, it's sort of, Debussy said the same thing when he said, j'écris seulement pour mon plaisir. I write only for my pleasure.
My pleasure, right.
And I think there's an honesty and an immediacy about that comes from them. But it so happens that it has a much wider appeal too. So in fact, the composers we've focused on in Atlanta, and that's another thing we've done here, is to have ongoing relationships with a few composers. And they come every year or every other year, and we do pieces of theirs multiple times, and we do multiple pieces of theirs. So they become known entities in our musical community. They're really kind of rock stars now. Jennifer Higdon gets mobbed in the lobby.
Yeah,
and
here
it's a wonderful thing to witness.
Yeah, here
it's
too.
It's just wonderful.
Well, her work, again, I think like Aaron J. Kernis, I haven't heard much from him lately, but his work also, there is a switch to tonality. And what I was going to say is maybe all those people from the 50s tried out everything, and then this generation said, okay, you know, that's not really where I want to go, and maybe we ought to kind of turn back a little bit. I think you try things, and in art, of course, there are those that, you know, break the mold initially, and then there are those that benefit from that. But what I'm most interested in is the audience reaction, because obviously we see the direction that composing is going, but the audience, you have made it accessible to the audience, and this seems to be one of the big problems throughout the country here with orchestral audiences.
Well, I think it has to do with how it gets presented, how it's built into the mix of things. I think the fact that our audiences have a chance to get to know these composers, I always interview them on video, and we have those interviews available. We also show them at the concerts. So they have a chance to connect to the composer as a person as well as a musician. I think that's a link that helps. And I think having the opportunity to get to know one, two, or three, or four composers over time rather than just sort of a generic sense of new music makes a big difference. And I also think it has to do with how they're presented just on the surface. The fact that their pictures are in our brochure, like soloists or conductors, the fact that they're trumpeted and highlighted rather than ghettoized or we're going to sneak a piece in on the program, but we won't talk about it. You know, that kind of approach I really think is wrong.
Well, you also have an insight because you are a composer. Isn't that true as well? I mean,
I went to conservatory as a composition student.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I did write until I was about 35. I started writing again a few years ago, and I'm hoping to build that back into my life because I've missed it so much. In the meantime, it's been so immensely gratifying getting to work with so many living composers, which has been such a huge part of my musical life and very important part of it. And
so,
I can't think of anything more rewarding.
No, but how did you make the turn to conducting? I mean, this is a wonderful mix that you've got. You understand what's going on musically, which is always helpful. And I say in contemporary music and, also, I suppose, in the traditional repertoire. But then your conducting is that's the latest thing that you've done. I mean, you studied, what piano was it when you were initially as a child?
I was playing piano, violin, flute, and other instruments as a child, and so I was a little unsure which thing I would focus on. I knew I wanted to be a musician. And then I had the chance to conduct when I was quite young. And once I did that, I realized, oh, all these musical activities will serve this discipline. And I realized I didn't have to eliminate instruments, but add more of them and continue to study composition and focus then on the other things a conductor needs, the study of languages and score reading and ear training. And so all of that brought into focus my varied musical activities when I realized I wanted to conduct for a living.
And you certainly were faced with an orchestra that had a stellar leader, Robert Shaw. I don't know about his orchestral conducting. I think he certainly was had the recordings that I have heard certainly were superb. But I've heard stories that he was rather temperamental. But of course, his choral conducting was just unbeatable. So you inherited this, didn't you?
After he certainly is a giant in Atlanta's musical culture and someone I think of often. I remember he was also a very meticulous marker of parts, very detailed markings from
him. He wanted to tell you exactly what he wanted, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was, when we were doing the St. John Passion a couple of years ago, I was marking my parts quite carefully, too, to save rehearsal time and facilitate the process. And I swear I felt him looking over my shoulder laughing at me. Ha ha, now it's your turn, because I was at it about 12 hours a day.
Well, you might have had an ESP, a transmigrated ESP.
That's right. That way. But well, I often think of him working here, and the chorus was so kind to me when I came. And they were calling me RS2. I felt a little like
a
ship.
Oh, isn't that something?
But it was very nice.
This release is really very special. It's the kind of thing that you have to be careful about listening to, I think. It's, again, as we said earlier, it is a very special experience. Do you feel that...
As a listener, I found it to be quite absorbing.
Oh, it's... I wanted to ask you how... I suddenly, when I was listening, of course, to the Adams, I said, is this really just music? Isn't it a dramatic presentation? Isn't it more than just the musical experience? And
I remember at one point when working on that piece, I was thinking of John Cage and how much I learned from Cage about opening one's definition of music to include sounds that we might not ordinarily deem musical. So when John uses the taped sounds of footsteps and cell phones and conversations, they became musical for me, in the way that he organized them. They are music. They are for me, those sounds, even though they're not.
But it's a dramatic, effect. I just wondered, this Adams particularly affected me it was a dramatic presentation. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, you're saying that the sounds were music, but are they really, I mean, would you categorize that as something that you would teach, say, to composers when they're studying composing?
Yes, in the sense that I think he organized those sounds so carefully in terms of their volume, their timing, their combination. I think he was as careful with those sounds as he was with the notes for the orchestra or for the chorus. And so the composer's sensibility, the musical sense, I think is in the organization of those sounds. They're not just in the sense that Cage would allow the windows to be opened and we attend to those sounds with our own musical sensibilities. I think in this case, John actually took those sounds and organized them in a way that shows his compositional taste and aesthetic.
Well, it's imperative to have that in there. And as I say, it's a stunning work. What have you planned for your next release? Have you thought about it?
I think the next one coming out, because we have things in the can already, I think the next one coming out is Jennifer Higdon's The Singing Rooms, which the Philadelphia Orchestra premiered. And that's combined with a piece of Alvin Singleton called Praisemaker for chorus and orchestra and the Scriabin Poem of Ecstasy.
Oh, that's magnificent.
So it's another kind of mix of things that somehow work well together.
What you're doing is you're putting people in a position where they have to listen and they will be transported.
Good.
Isn't that nice?
And I like that.
It's great. What about just, as I said, classical repertoire or, run-of-the-mill repertoire? Do you see that on your agenda at all?
Well, I do a lot of standard repertoire or core repertoire here in Atlanta and elsewhere. I'm not so intent myself on recording much of it. I'm much more passionate about recording things that are less recorded. For instance, our Vaughan Williams recordings, I think, are part of that. I have recorded a few things that are widely recorded, like the Brahms Requiem or the Berlioz Requiem, but I think that's because it speaks to the particular character of our institution having such a great chorus.
Right.
But my passion is for doing less recorded works and new works, just because I feel that that's serving a greater purpose in the world.
Well, maybe you can offer some sensible advice to the musical community in terms of success with programming contemporary music, because as I said earlier, that seems to be they say that is the reason that we are losing attendance at concerts, and
which is nonsense.
That's nonsense.
I really believe it is nonsense, because I think what's happening with concerts and concert attendance, and there's always the gloom and doom, the apocalyptic people about music, which I find fascinating, because in my perception, there's more people playing, listening to, attending concerts than ever in the history of music. There's a tremendous interest in our musical treasures right now. More people studying music. I mean, it's just an astounding number of people who are engaged with this art form more than ever in history.
Really?
I mean, if we just think about how many people were actually attending concerts in Vienna when Mozart was writing music, not just because the population is bigger, but because of the demographics of who can afford it and who's educated enough to enjoy it. And we have so many more people engaged in that way now. And I think what's happening actually is a big cultural shift, a big social shift, because it's not just concerts, it's theater, it's all kinds of
visual art,
it's all kinds of public events that the way we access our culture is changing, and I think largely due to the computer. I mean, we have a way of accessing now, I just think about, I was watching something on television with the on-demand channel last night.
Right.
Well, that was certainly not available in my childhood when we had three channels. So already, the world's a very different place in my lifetime. And I think all of this is, and the recording industry having such difficulties,
yes,
I think also has to do with people accessing their music by downloading it instead of buying CDs. So there's this big shift going on in the way people access music and many other things in their lives. And I think once this settles down, I think there's really no trouble at all. It's a question of the paradigm and the structure and the way we've been accustomed to things working will not be the same. But I think the art will persist.
Yes. Well, that's very reassuring to hear from you, certainly. It's a very intelligent attitude, and hopefully more people will hear you say that
And I think that the gloom and doom doesn't help us, really.
It doesn't. Just the wonderful music that you are presenting to the
just
audience.
Just the gloom and doom on the CD, right?
That's all right. So the next one, we got to have a happy experience.
That's right. But Home of Ecstasy.
Yes. Oh, well, yes, that's
it. Doesn't get
ecstasy
happier, right?
Is always good,
right?
Robert Spano, it's been wonderful speaking with you. Thank you for taking your time out.
Oh,
to
it's
speak
a pleasure
with
to talk with
today.
You.
And I hope you come to Philadelphia and conduct here.
I'll be there in February with the Curtis Orchestra.
Wonderful.
Looking forward to that. Wow. I always enjoy being there. As I studied there, so there's a
yes.
very special emotional attachment to being
I hope
there.
To see you then. Hope you'll come and visit us at the station.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.